It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show,
I find that trying a personal injury case in general district court is everything I like about trying cases with none of the stuff I don't like. There's virtually no discovery in a general district court case, so there's none of this sitting around, from my perspective, wasting kind of a lot of time. I mean, I understand that you have to, as a defendant, ask a number of questions and depositions and depose a number of doctors, but for the most part, I find that to be something that's useful in 10% of the cases and not useful in 90% of the cases.
Private attorney David Douthat at the law firm of Allen & Allen discusses taking a small personal injury case to general district court to seek a money judgment of up to $25,000 without the complexities of circuit court. And during this week's News You Can Use, you'll learn how the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act is helping millions of people 2 years before its implementation in 2014. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 153, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. The Department of Health and Human Services announced new figures in December showing that the number of uninsured young adults has dropped by 2.5 million as a direct result of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. The act allows young adults to stay on their parents' health insurance plans until they are 26 years old, a benefit that helped 31,200 young adults in Virginia last year alone. This spring, the U.S. Supreme Court will hear a constitutional challenge to the act. The court will allow oral argument on four issues, including the individual mandate and the act's Medicaid expansion. The act expands the Medicaid program to improve access to care for low-income adults, primarily the working poor and chronically ill. In considering the controversial individual mandate, the requirement that nearly all persons have health insurance, the U.S. Supreme Court will resolve a split in the U.S. Circuit Courts of Appeal, with the D.C. Circuit and the Sixth Circuit upholding the constitutionality of the individual mandate, while the 11th Circuit found it unconstitutional. In other news, as for-profit post-secondary schools have rapidly expanded throughout the U.S., state government has frequently failed to challenge for-profit school abuses and fraud. One result? Increasingly, students are left buried under mountains of debt with no prospect for gainful employment. Yet most states have substantial legal recourse against fraud if they choose to step up to the plate to protect citizens. These are some of the major findings of State Inaction, Gaps in State Oversight of For-Profit Higher Education, a report issued in December by the National Consumer Law Center. The report summarizes state regulatory structures and analyzes state levels of resources dedicated to enforcement and oversight of for-profit post-secondary schools. Existing consumer protection laws, relief funds, and other options available to assist students who are harmed by fraud or abuses are also reviewed. An overview of initial improvements put in place by several states indicates that it is possible to perform better oversight even with limited resources. However, every state has room for improvement, and the report offers 14 recommendations to assist states that wish to better protect students and taxpayers. The full report is available at www.nclc.org. With this week's news you can use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You are listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's case that changed the Commonwealth is Baum versus United Virginia Bank. The bank obtained a judgment against Mr. Baum and then garnished his wages. His employer delivered a portion of his wages to the state court clerk. Then Mr. Baum filed a bankruptcy petition and properly exempted his wages by filing a homestead deed. Despite this, the bank was sent the garnished wages from the state court clerk. Mr. Baum filed a complaint against the bank and asked that the money be returned to him. The bankruptcy court agreed, concluding that he filed a homestead deed 2 days before the summons and garnishment ended. This properly exempted his wages under Virginia law, and the bank had to release the money. This has been the law ever since. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and Baum versus United Virginia Bank is this week's case that changed the Commonwealth.
On July 1, 2011, the jurisdictional limit of the General District Court was increased to $25,000, allowing people to obtain larger money judgments without the complexities of circuit court. Private attorney David Douthat at the law firm of Allen & Allen discussed taking a small personal injury case to General District Court at the annual statewide legal aid conference, and the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show was there for his presentation.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Dave Douthat. I work at Allen & Allen in Richmond, and I'm here to talk to you today about handling small personal injury claims in the General District Court. General District Court is a great place to be, I find. The judges there handle a huge docket of cases, certainly much more than personal injury claims. Criminal cases, landlord-tenant cases, disputes about creditors and debtors, a wide variety of cases. They handle them quickly and efficiently, and they do a great job. I'm very pleased with all the judges I've ever been in front of in the Virginia General District Courts. I find that trying a personal injury case in General District Court is everything I like about trying cases, with none of the stuff I don't like. There's virtually no discovery in a General District Court case, so there's none of this sitting around, from my perspective, wasting kind of a lot of time. I mean, I understand that you have to, as a defendant, ask a number of questions and depositions and depose a number of doctors, but for the most part, I find that to be something that's useful in 10% of the cases and not useful in 90% of the cases. And the trouble from the defense attorney's point of view is you don't know which 10% of the case it's going to be useful in, so you do it 100% of the time. But trying a case in the General District Court involves just getting up and trying it. There's a meeting with a client preparing for it, and then there's going in and doing it. There are no depositions. There are no interrogatories. There are subpoenas that can be addressed to non-parties as well as parties, but that's simply a document review thing, so it's very easy to do. My firm takes these cases on a volume basis. The reason we handle cases like these on a volume basis, one, sort of a thin edge of the wedge argument. If we get an insurance company or a group of insurance companies arguing about value, you know, soft tissue cases, minor treatment, injuries that resolve completely, they aren't worth very much, we're not going to pay very much, we sort of see that as the thin edge of the wedge. I mean, where do you draw the line on handling cases? So we'll take a number of cases, and we probably don't lose money on cases, but we certainly don't make a whole lot of money handling cases like these. And there are certainly times where, although we're handling them on a contingency fee that's set in advance, that we'll adjust the fee downward so that I wouldn't get any more money than a client got out of a personal injury case. So we're trying not to lose money on them, but we're also looking at them in a broader context, which is, you know, a line drawing exercise. How do we keep insurance companies from just pushing the line further and further back to where they're not paying anything? And another reason, of course, is that people who have smaller cases still have cases, and they need to be resolved. I think it's very difficult for somebody to handle a case like this on their own, and certainly to receive, in many cases, fair treatment from an insurance company with a case like this. So General District Court is a great alternative for handling cases like that. You can handle them quickly, efficiently. They are essentially free to try for the person who's injured. If you win a personal injury case in the general district court, you're going to get back your filing fee, which is typically $56. But you get it back, and there are essentially no other costs to trying a case in general district court. So I want to talk about the nuts and bolts of handling cases and go through the process sort of from case intake and evaluation through trial and possible appeal. The first thing I would say is there was a time, I think, probably prior to when I was practicing, but there was a time where you could bluff an insurance company. You could say, I'm going to file suit if you don't settle, or you know, here's a copy I'm going to mail you of a complaint I'm going to file next week if we don't settle this case. I think those days are over. If you're going to decide to try a case in the general district court, decide to try it. Don't bluff. Commit to trying it. It's actually a lot of fun. And you're not going to get anywhere bluffing an insurance company these days, I don't think. And you can decide to do it a number of different ways. I mean, we still try to negotiate with every single carrier. We try to negotiate all the cases because, although I like trying the cases, the people I represent typically are much happier if we're able to settle their case without involving them in a trial. And we have some success. All carriers will settle some cases. Some carriers will settle virtually all cases. But almost all carriers have some cases they're just not going to settle. They're going to offer you a nuisance value or nothing at all and tell you to go try it. Certainly that's the case if liability is not clear. If there's a dispute as to who's at fault, and of course everybody knows Virginia is one of the handful of remaining contributory negligence states where any negligence on the part of a plaintiff will defeat his or her claim for injuries. It doesn't have to be a majority, or, you know. Defense attorneys are fond of saying 1%, a drop in the bucket, whatever. More common than that, though, you'll just run into a situation where there's a dispute as to the value of a case. Insurance company will tell you it's worth $5,000, you think it's worth $10,000, you find yourself in an impasse. What are you going to do? And that leads us into evaluating a case. Of course, general district courts in Virginia for personal injury claims or civil claims are courts of limited jurisdiction. They have exclusive jurisdiction for claims below $4,500. Concurrent jurisdiction with the circuit court, that is, you could file in the general district court or the circuit court, a case where you are seeking $4,500 to $25,000, but they don't have any jurisdiction at all for a personal injury case above $25,000. You'd have to file in the circuit court for a case that exceeds $25,000 as the amount you want to sue for. All right, so how do you evaluate a case? How do you feel comfortable that you want to file in the general district court? I'd say a clear rule of thumb, a very bright line rule, is if your special damages, your medical bills and your wages are more than $25,000, you probably should not file in general district court. If they're less than that, consider it. The special damages are not the entire story of a personal injury claim. You're entitled to any number of other elements of damages, but they are an important part, and I look at them as a starting point. I would also look at the type of injury you have. Typically, a good candidate for general district court would be a soft tissue case as opposed to a broken bone case or a case with a scar. I mean, there are exceptions to all of this, but those are sort of the dividing line in terms of the injuries that I'd look at. Well, of course, you have to plead a specific amount. There's none of this in excess of $20,000 that you see in some other jurisdictions. With some exceptions, and these are typically things like a MedPay claim or a property damage claim that I'll cover in a little while, but for a personal injury claim, I would always sue for $25,000. I don't see any reason not to. And that's because although I feel like I have a decent handle on what a given judge is going to do with a given claim on any given day, I don't always. I've been surprised. I've certainly had them return more money than I thought they would. Medical bills are an important part of it. And like I said, I mean, clearly, if you've got $25,000 in medical bills, you can't very well file in general district court ordinarily. Although, I'm filing a case. I was talking to the guy last week about this. He's got $26,000 or $27,000 in medical bills. But there is a liability dispute that I think will be better served arguing his case in general district court. And I know for a fact that the coverage is limited to $25,000. So I'm hoping that if I file for $25,000 in general district court, I can get his carrier, who's also denied their insured coverage, which is not terribly helpful for me. But I'm hoping I can get both those issues resolved rather than going through circuit court. So the medical bills are very important. But the other things are important as well. I mean, a person with virtually no treatment at all, but a significant scar, a scar in the face, or a scar somewhere that'd be very obvious, I'd be hesitant to file that in general district court because I think that adds so much more value than just the medical bills. And, of course, there's some other things as well. I mean, there's the duration. Typically, if it goes on much more than 2 or 3 months with any regularity, you're probably talking about too long a period of time to file comfortably in the general district court. There are exceptions to that as well. I mean, if you go see the doctor once a month for 3 months, well, you may very well be able to file a case like that in general district court.
You're listening to a presentation by private attorney David Douthat at the law firm of Allen & Allen about taking a small personal injury case to General District Court. We'll be back in a moment. If you're just joining us, the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show now rejoined David Douthat, a private attorney at the law firm of Allen & Allen, about taking a small personal injury case to General District Court.
Some other things to think about as well, is there any permanency? A scar would be an example of permanency. Are there any ongoing effects from the injury? You know, is this somebody who, although hasn't been back to the doctor for some time, is still complaining pretty regularly about pain or limitation with activities or is still missing work, then you might want to think about filing in circuit court. I mean, you can find yourself up against that $25,000 ceiling pretty quickly. One thing that's interesting, the jurisdiction of the General District Court was raised effective July 1st from $15,000 to $25,000, so a pretty significant jump, about a 40% jump in their jurisdiction. I've got a couple of cases still pending that I filed before July 1st and, you know, filed for $15,000, but are coming up for trial. Probably the last of them will come up for trial in the next month or two. But there are courts that will entertain for suits filed prior to July 1st. You sometimes can. It depends on the court. Some courts will allow it with notice to the defendant prior to the day of trial. Some courts won't allow it at all over the defendant's objection. And this is a good time to point out one of the ongoing themes of this talk will be there are rules that you have to follow if people are going to make you stick to them. But if you can talk to a defense attorney and agree to something outside the rules, as long as nobody objects, I've never really had any trouble getting a district court judge to go along with something everybody agrees to. The first war story, I had a trial sometime in the spring. I had subpoenaed the trooper on a disputed liability case. The defendant admitted liability the day before trial. We got to trial and they unadmitted liability after I'd let the trooper go that morning from his trial subpoena. And he had given me his phone number and said, call me if you need me. I'm in the area. I can probably be there. But rather than do all that, I talked to the defense attorney and said, why don't we just submit the police report to the judge and have the judge look at the police report as evidence of what the officer would testify to. Now, clearly, it's statutory. Police report is not admissible in a civil case for any reason at all. But with nobody objecting, the judge was fine looking at the police report and taking that as the officer's testimony. So if you can get an agreement to do something, you may be able to get away with anything at all. There's some other things to think about as well. In the General District Court, of course, there are no jury because there's no place for them to sit, which is true. And the judge is the fact finder in addition to making all the legal referee type calls. I have found that juries will sometimes weigh particular pieces of evidence more heavily than a judge will. I have handled cases where, you know, the damage to a person's car, probably to put it charitably, not very extensive, and maybe more accurately, not visible to the naked eye. Juries tend to be very skeptical of those claims. Not always, but they tend to be skeptical of those claims and to think, you know, if there's no damage to the car, how could the person be injured to any great extent? It's never helpful to have those pictures, but when you do, sometimes judges aren't as hung up on that as a jury might be. So that can be something to consider as well. There are a couple of jurisdictions up in my area, up in Richmond, where historically, in both my experience and the experience of everyone I've ever heard of, juries just typically don't return very good verdicts. There are places where you are better off considering the jury pool being in front of a judge. Another consideration, a district court trial is essentially free to the plaintiff. There's an attorney fee. There's a filing fee of $56. You're going to get it back. All of the medical evidence can come in by way of affidavit attached to medical record, which is, I'll say, essentially free. Every now and then I'll get a call from somebody who says, we want our attorney to review this just to make sure it's okay, and we have to charge, you know, $10 or $50. And considering what a doctor would charge for a deposition or to come to trial live, I'm happy to pay that $50. And it's so rare. This is specific to the General District Court. It's Code of Virginia 16.1-88.2, and it says, in essence, in a trial in the General District Court, medical evidence can be presented by both parties, either party, by way of a record or a report, as long as it's accompanied by an affidavit. We'll cover the requirements and the differences between those two in just a minute, but yeah, it's a specific hearsay exception, I would guess. So your medical testimony as a plaintiff is free in General District Court. which makes a huge cost savings. I have paid doctors, I had two from the same group at a trial 7 or 8 years ago, I paid them each $6,000 to come to trial for a combined amount of testimony that might have been an hour and a half. I mean, it's just an exorbitant amount of money. And I know of doctors who charge $12,000 for trial time, and that's for a day or any part thereof. Now, part of that is doctors don't want to come to trial and testify. And that's fairly simple and obvious, but they've got you over a barrel. If they're the only game in town, they're the treating doctor, you need them at trial, you pay them or you do without. Those are your choices. Literal Hobson's choice. Having the ability to have the doctor testify just by signing his name to an affidavit or her name to an affidavit is a gigantic advantage. And it's one that we point out all the time to the doctors. When we send them the affidavit to sign, we say the case is set for trial on this day, you can appear, or you could sign this affidavit and return it to me. And 100 out of 100 players choose to sign the affidavit and return it. There is a significant savings such that, you know, you might be at least as well off as a plaintiff in general district court with a verdict of $23,000 or $24,000 versus a verdict of, you know, $30,000 or $35,000 in circuit court. So that's sort of an exception to your medical bills being under $25,000. Obviously, case evaluation involves, you know, looking at the particular facts of a case, and this is just sort of an overview of it, but these are things I typically think about in evaluating a case. I'm also cognizant of the fact that all parties have an automatic right to appeal any decision of the general district court to the circuit court that's in that same venue. The circuit court doesn't have to accept it or grant a writ or anything like that. It's not like getting to the Supreme Court. It's automatic. You note your appeal. As long as a defendant has insurance and there's an irrevocable letter saying there's coverage sufficient to pay the verdict that was rendered in the general district court, you don't even have to post a bond anymore. That's new this year, too. So it's free for a defendant to appeal. With that in mind, I always tell my clients who were considering general district court, we want to do well, but we don't want to do too well. From a defendant's point of view, a verdict of $25,000 is the worst thing that's going to happen to them. The worst has already happened. There's no reason not to appeal. You can also get prejudgment interest in general district court if you ask for it. So if you get $25,000, your costs and prejudgment interest, you know, dating back to the date of the accident, you can now be looking at a verdict of, you know, $27,000, $28,000, and the worst really has happened. The defendant's going to appeal that almost every single time. I've had one verdict back in the old days when it was $15,000 that was not appealed. But I just got one that shocked me for $25,000, one that I'd originally filed for $15,000, asked to increase the ad damnum on the morning of trial, which is how I found out you had to give prior notice. Motion was denied. Judge went out of her way to tell me you could always non-suit and refile for $25,000. So I said, all right, we'll non-suit. And then the defense attorney said, well, everybody's here. How about you trade your non-suit? And we agree that you can amend your ad damnum $25,000. And then she gave me $25,000. I'm floored. Couldn't believe it. Well, those things will happen sometime, which is why I always sue for $25,000. You may as well ask for the most.
You've been listening to a presentation by David Douthat at the law firm of Allen & Allen about taking a small personal injury case to general district court. This is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's Strange But True Law is from Title 42.1, which deals with libraries. The Library of Virginia is the official custodian for the Commonwealth of all public records of any kind, regardless of physical form or characteristics that are transferred to it from any agency. And they take their work seriously. Under Code of Virginia Section 42.1-90, the Librarian of Virginia can petition a circuit court for return of public records and can request the court to issue an order for the sheriff to seize and return the public records without any notice to the person who is holding them and without the posting of any bond. Thankfully, this does not apply to overdue library books. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and that's this week's Strange But True Law.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral four, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. A study of low-wage industries reported that 26% of surveyed workers are paid less than the minimum wage and 76% are not properly paid for overtime, costing the average worker more than $2,600 a year. Join us next week when employment law attorney Harris Butler talks about wage theft, how to spot it, and what to do about it in a rebroadcast of a show originally heard on July 21, 2010. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.